the last episode, we heard horror stories of product leaders and teams haunted by the risky assumptions that surfaced too late in their product development process. Is this destined to be your fate as well? Well, not if I can help it. In this episode of Fearless Product Leadership, we learn how to mitigate those risky assumptions from seasoned product leaders who answer the question, how do you surface assumptions during product discovery? Welcome to the Fearless Product Leadership Podcast. This is the show for new product leaders seeking to increase their confidence and competence. In every episode, I ask experienced and thoughtful product leaders to share their strategies and tactics that have helped them tackle a tough responsibility of the product leader role. I love helping emerging product leaders shorten their learning curves to expedite their professional success with great products, teams, and stakeholder relationships. I'm your host and CEO of Fearless Product, Hope Curion. Assumptions that never made it to the light of day frequently unsettle even the most customer-centric, evidence-driven product teams. Why? Because surfacing assumptions is not yet a widely practiced ritual for most product teams, even the advanced ones, who dedicate significant effort to customer discovery. In my quest to produce this episode, I found only a few product leaders willing to share their practices, which is why I actually only have 3 guests on today's episode, which means you're getting a little extra hope time in this one. Fearlessly tackling the question, how do you surface assumptions during product discovery, are Mark Abraham, head of product engagement at ASOS and former CPO at Settled, Audrey Cheng, VP of product at PushPay, and Sean Murphy, former VP of product at Target and VP of product and engineering at Custom Inc. Stay tuned to the end of the episode for more examples and resources to help your team surface assumptions. I'm going to share my recommended techniques to surface assumptions at all points during the product development journey, from identifying markets and TAM to delivering your initial product or features to a pilot group of customers or in an early access program. First, Mark Abraham of ASOS shares that he relies on that all-enlightening question, why? To help his teams interrogate their ideas for their underlying assumptions. And Mark describes the technique he uses to mitigate risk during product development, the cross-functional pre-mortem.
When it comes to surfacing assumptions, and particularly working with people who haven't necessarily, for good reasons, have thought in that kind of way, maybe more used to focus on delivery or focusing on happy paths, to start thinking in assumptions is quite a big step. So for me, the way I typically try to bridge that step and make it part of people's daily habits almost before it even becomes a more formal practice, if you like, is just one simple word, which is why. I know it sounds super simple and we all know about the 5 whys, but getting into the habit of asking why is so important if you want to really uncover the assumptions. Because what typically happens is that people will come to you, can come from all kinds of, can be customers, can be from within the business, can be external people with ideas. They come with you to you with solutions. And they're, in their minds, it's the best idea. We should definitely do it. It's a no-brainer. So I appreciate it's hard to say, well, where is that idea coming from? How do you know it's a good idea? And the simplest and gentlest way I feel to do that, to start uncovering some of the underlying assumptions, is to ask why. And the way I sometimes do this with product people who are not necessarily used to that way of questioning, if you like, is to just do it with them. They come to me and say, I want to do this, or I want to implement this, or I want to test this. I'll say, why? And they'll give me a reason. And then I'll say, why again? Again, it's classic 5 why. And after the second why, it dawns on them what I'm doing. And they can, you know, they might find it a bit odd and thinking, stop asking why, give me the answer, or say yes or no. That's all I'm asking for. But equally, they start seeing the value of probing and really trying to uncover things. So that's the simplest way, and that's typically where I start. Then, when he gets into more kind of formal practices of trying to unearth that and tactics that you can use, is when people start thinking about experiments. You know, whether it's or experiments, or even just learning from customers. Whether, again, if you want to do a behavioral test and you want to do, let's say, an A-B test, or you want to do more of kind of what they call attitudinal research. So you want to understand how customers feel about things. It's only worthwhile, in my humble opinion, if you have an understanding of what you're trying to learn, what kind of underlying assumptions are you trying to prove or disprove? No, that's the other key thing that I sometimes still talk to people about is like, yes, you might have this assumption and you test it through a prototype or a simple A-B test, a customer conversation, and it gets disproven very quickly. And people are like, no, failure. You know, I had this great assumption, I had this great idea, and, you know, it's not working or I've got it wrong. And that's cool. I've learned that, you know, especially when you talk about assumption hypotheses, that not everyone, those words in their own right, don't necessarily resonate with everyone, right? Especially if you're not a product person or you think it's a bit just buzzwords. So I talk a lot more about risks and talking about uncovering these assumptions. Even if they get disproven very quickly, it's a way of mitigating risk. Because what if you didn't spend the time formulating the assumptions and then building a test or doing some research on top of it, and you just went straight in and built that thing, or, you know, created that feature or launched that service? You know, think about the risk and think about the cost and the damage. And to build on that kind of idea, one of the tactics that I use is what they call a pre-mortem. Originally created by a professor, I think he is, called Gary Klein. And it's really nice because it's fun, but it's equally a very serious way in a safe space of saying, before we start writing any lines of code or building anything or designing anything, think of all the things that could go wrong in a year's time. What would need to happen for this project or this product or this feature to fail? And it's a really nice exercise because you haven't done anything yet. So you can just freely brainstorm about all the things that go wrong and why they could go wrong. And again, that's a nice way of almost flipping and saying what needs to go right and what do we absolutely need to get right for this product or feature to succeed, right? And I typically, when I do the exercise, I try to get a really good kind of cross-section of people in the room. So not just engineers or designers, but a marketeer or a salesperson, whoever has a stake in a particular product or feature. And we look at that exercise of looking at all the things that can go wrong through a multitude of lenses as a result. So we think about what could go wrong from a commercial or user adoption perspective, from an implementation perspective, legal perspective. And similarly, another tactic that I use is very similar to that pre-mortem exercise is scenario thinking, where again, very natural. We always think about the happy path, right? Of all the things that could go right. And you think about one type of customer with one need. But let's play around with edge cases. Do we need to cater for those edge cases? Do we need to cater for those specific customers? And sometimes you come to the conclusion that you don't. But even just widening your thinking about all the kind of different scenarios that are worth and related assumptions that are worth considering is quite easily forgotten. And very important to cover if you want to really bring as much as you can on any of your assumptions going forward. And then also that gives you a baseline to go back to, because as you start developing, there'll be new assumptions, right? And there might be, as you go, much more important or risky than some of the ones that you started off with. But the whole trick, obviously, is to make those feedback loops between assumptions being tested or new assumptions come up as short as possible.
That's awesome. I never hear about teams doing pre-mortems, and I'm so excited that you do it. Like, it's so simple, and getting those cross-functional perspectives in the room for it is powerful. Like you said, it can be fun. I mean, it's not always fun to think about the downside risks, but way more fun to think about it in that moment than discover it later when it's really hard to recover.
Totally, absolutely.
So, that's awesome.
Next, Audrey Cheng relies on using a lean canvas to capture assumptions early in product planning. Her product teams use that canvas of assumptions to check and recheck them with each other and stakeholders and continually revise it as they learn more about their customers' needs and their potential solutions.
I think, well, you know, with product discovery, again, like thinking, I think sometimes you have to assume that you know certain things, and sometimes you're using market data and thinking that your user group or your customers are are also reflective of that market data. And sometimes that might not be true, right? And so, and I think that's just one example. But I think the thing that we try to do as we go forward is just saying, assuming that's true and this is true, then these are the insights that we have and these are the things that we think we can realize if we go down this route. And we actually do that in a number of ways. So we do our user testing, we do, you know, user interviews, we do our beta testing, and you know, that helps to bring a little bit more confidence, and we hope to discover if some of our assumptions seem to be off during those periods, but they may not always be highlighted. And I think your metrics kind of fall into helping you to manage that as you go forward, and hopefully you're not building for 12 months before you release something, or even 6 months before you release something. But I think those small incremental improvements that you make and monitoring and measuring help you to actually flesh out if your assumptions are actually wrong. But the way that we actually would surface that in our discovery is in a number of ways. So when we complete a piece of research, we actually present out to our team to present the insights and findings from our research. As part of that, we actually surface the assumptions there. We also use, so that everyone is aware of, like, what's our base? Like, what did we assume everyone is doing? What did we assume that everyone is feeling? And whatever else. We'll surface it there. The other thing that we do is we actually do a lean canvas, and those assumptions are also surfaced there. The lean canvas for us is really a high level, very super high level, top view of what is it that we're building? What problem are we solving? How did we decide to approach it? But in there is also included is the assumptions. So I can pick up that lean canvas, or I can bring up that lean canvas and show anybody, hey, this is the problem that we're solving. This is why we're doing it. This is who it's for. This is how we decided to solve it. We also made some assumptions here as to, you know, how we might go about solving it. So we really try and bring that to the fore. The other areas are we work really closely with our customer success team. So if we have some assumptions, we might actually talk to them about it too and sort of see if they have different feedback for us or have a different viewpoint. But we will surface those assumptions to them. And quite often they may say like, I'm not too sure. I've heard a couple cases here. And so that gives us an opportunity actually to maybe get more confidence in areas where we thought we knew something. So sometimes you know things and sometimes you think you know things. And I think the distinction there is to ensure that as we go forward and as we make those investments, that we feel comfortable enough with those assumptions and that the business teams that we're partnering with also feel comfortable with those assumptions.
Finally, Sean Murphy, former VP of Product at Target, shares the tactics he uses to surface assumptions, like logical reasoning and customer interviews, and his preferred techniques to test those assumptions.
So how do I like to surface assumptions when we're doing discovery, understanding the opportunity space for a product? And there's a few things that I go to and think through. So first off is before jumping into anything is just evaluating it logically. I know maybe this is too simple, but sometimes there needs to be a pause to say, is the assumption important? I think of an example about, you know, the test of would a consumer or a guest pay for this product or service that you're trying to build? Hey, that's an assumption. But yet we've seen a whole host of examples of where starting with free is the right way to go. So even just working through the logic, is the assumption really necessary or make or break, is an important first step. Because sometimes there's not as many assumptions that you need to figure out as you think needs to happen. Next, second is I like to interview people. I think a lot of product organizations like to run the testing, but I actually like to pause and usually 5 interviews, and there's tremendous breakthroughs that can happen to validate or invalidate assumptions. And I've become recently a big fan of the jobs to be done method of interviewing, where you really get to the true motivations of your users, your consumers, to understand if there's a need there. Third, testing in the wild. If you've got a product and people are already using it and you have a chance to test or do a light prototype or a fake door test, of course, that's a great way to get a sense of it. And the fourth tactic I like to use for validating assumptions is actually the Google AdWords test. And this is, you know, whatever space you're in, is you can probably find some keywords. You can run an ad in Google and see, will people even click on it? Can you draw people in and will they then use that to validate whether this is a real problem or need or not?
I've interviewed more than 30 product leaders for this podcast series, and they each get to choose the questions from my backlog of what they're most interested in answering.
Reality is that while I think this is perhaps one of the most critical responsibilities for a product leader, this question was not one of the more popular ones for them to answer. So for the rest of the episode, I'm going to share my recommendations on why, when, and how you can bring critical assumptions to the light of day with your product teams and stakeholders to increase your alignment and bring focus and purpose to your product discovery. So why don't more teams surface assumptions or even know how to do this? First, there's an evolutionary spectrum of product teams. On one side of the spectrum are the delivery teams. They learn after delivering a solution whether or not they hit or missed customers' expectations. Further evolved are the teams that focus on problems and then develop an MVP to see if it solves that problem. Often these solutions are light in functionality or difficult to replace substitutes. Next on the evolutionary curve are the product teams that learn even earlier by observing how customers use existing solutions and often pair their discovery with a prototype solution before they begin coding. Now, even further evolved are the product teams that create hypotheses and describe the evidence that would need to be true to prove their hypothesis true or false before they begin developing. And for each of those types of teams, they have rituals and resources that they know and they practice continuously as part of their product discovery and development. But only the most advanced product teams make surfacing critical assumptions a must-do ritual in their product development. While Scrum is widely practiced, it has no ceremony for surfacing assumptions. And it's too late. It's describing the build process. It really will be incumbent on you as the product leader and your product teams to make surfacing assumptions a priority in your product discovery. And frankly, it'll probably come down to how often in the past you or your product team members have worked on failed products, burning in the ashes of risky assumptions. And it'll come down to which of the many, many product discovery frameworks you and your teams use. Now, of the 18 discovery frameworks that I checked, only about 5 of them prescribe surfacing assumptions. And you can find out which do and which you'll need to augment with a handy graphic that I'll post in the show notes for this episode. Of course, I want to help you leverage the learning curves of others so you don't have to experience these worst-case scenarios of risky assumptions gone wrong to encourage you to inject surfacing assumptions as a critical step in your product discovery process. Why is it important to surface assumptions? Well, every new business, every new product, every new feature, every UI change is a bet on future human behavior. And often when we're making such bets, we have stars in our eyes of optimism we feel, believing that the desired behavior will take place. How many times have we heard the eye-rolling phrase, build it and they will come? Our judgment and overconfidence bias clouds our thinking about the reality of how truly difficult it is to change human behavior. Our customers, our very human customers, just like us, very human product developers, have status quo bias, sunk cost bias, and comfort with the devil we know. This aversion to change makes it challenging for the most effective product teams to drive adoption for new products and features. By shining a light on the assumptions that must be true for our products to succeed in achieving their goals, we can identify the riskiest ones and examine our good intentions and best laid plans against reality to increase our probability for success. Now, if you've made it this far, I'm going to assume, see what I did there, that you believe in surfacing assumptions. Fantastic. So what are some of the techniques you can use with your teams and stakeholders to do so? And when should you break out your surfacing assumptions bag of tricks? Well, let me share some scenarios, each with recommended techniques, and more details on each of these will be posted in the show notes for your reference. For business strategy and model decisions, I want to give you some context first. First of all, I cannot tell you how many product leaders I work with on product vision and strategy that are working at companies who haven't really defined their business strategy in a shareable, referenceable artifact. And yet every day, the leadership team is making decisions fraught with assumptions about their business, the customers, their competitors, the market. Often it's the product leader who shines a light on this by asking questions that attempt to externalize these assumptions for decisions being made with the leadership team, who is frankly often trying to maximize their options to achieve their financial goals. So let me tell you the how-to.
So my go-to technique to get these assumptions on the table is the Lean Canvas. Product leaders can either take the first stab at this and meet one-on-one with members of their leadership team to correct any mistakes in it, or you could do this as a workshop, could be virtual or in person, but give time to each leader to answer the questions to fill out the canvas individually first to reduce bias and surface very good tension in the decisions required to have a meaningful lean canvas that represents your business strategy and business model decisions. You may need to create multiple versions if you're operating in different markets. The results in the Lean Canvas are especially helpful to the product leader and product teams because they will be the value propositions, the target customer segments, the relationships, the channels, and revenue streams that will guide their product discovery and product development decisions. And after you get a working version of these, you can ask your leadership team to dot vote with red and green dots which of the answers on the Lean Canvas are known, green, or unknown, red. Voila, you now are aligned with the assumptions that must be validated to be true before you risk investing too much in a product that will miss the mark. Next, we're going to talk about other product and business decisions. These could be target market, go-to-market approach, pricing decisions, customer support models. Admittedly, this is kind of a catch-all, but every day, product teams and stakeholders are making decisions about choices that are fraught with assumptions. For small decisions that don't impact many internal or external people like customers, investors, and partners, or if these are decisions that are easily reversed, you probably won't need this level of surfacing assumption ritual. But a quick test to know whether or not it's going to be warranted to get those assumptions out of the darkness and into the light is to ask yourself two questions. How far-reaching will this decision be for our organization? And two, if we get it wrong, how costly would that be? If it's far-reaching and if the wrong call would be costly, it's likely a one-way door decision. And it's worth a little assumption surfacing exercise with your cross-functional partners. So what is the how-to? My go-to technique for product and business decisions like go-to-market, pricing, or customer support models, or other cross-functional impacting decisions is a two-parter. First, use the overconfidence and blind spot blaster, the pre-mortem. This works best as a workshop, virtual or in person, where you put the decision or recommendation on the center of a tombstone and have your product team and cross-functional partners and stakeholders murder that recommendation with all the things that contributed to its untimely demise. This reverse engineers the assumptions that must come true to ensure the recommendation or decision succeeds. Again, the participants should generate their what went wrong poison pills individually. And once they're on display, you can group, dedupe them, and behold, you have your assumptions. The next part leverages an assumption map. And I really like the one that David Bland and Precoil have. So you'll find a link to that in the show notes. And this is a tool that you can use to identify your riskiest assumptions. Once you've identified the riskiest assumptions, you can ask yourselves, is this truth knowable? How can we learn quickly whether it's true or false? Capture those ideas for how to test the validity of these assumptions. Voila, you now have your critical assumptions and a short list of how to turn each of those assumptions into evidence for their truthfulness or their falsehood. I have a helpful workshop to facilitate cross-functional leadership teams working on new product development to surface those critical assumptions. And I use a combination of these techniques to help teams visualize the future in a product vision, murder that vision with a pre-mortem, and mathematize that vision to surface all the assumptions that must be true to achieve their quantified desired outcomes. If that's of interest to you, please contact me on fearless-product for more info. All right, let's get back to the next round of product decisions that require surfacing assumptions, and that's product evolution decisions. So for context, the best product teams are actively interviewing, prototyping, and experimenting as part of their discovery practices. Yet many still don't surface and interrogate their assumptions throughout that process. This is easily corrected. I encourage product leaders to observe their team's discovery practices to see if they are in fact bringing assumptions to light, whether that's happening early in the process or late in their product development processes. If it's happening too late, these are easy techniques to correct your team's discovery practices and bring those risky assumptions in earlier to light so that they can figure out whether or not they are true or false before they invest too much time in discovery or development. So how do they do it? Well, whether your team is working on a new product or iterating an existing product, odds are they're making many assumptions about the customer, their alternative solutions, their true level of need for a new solution or design, their willingness and motivation to adopt a new solution, the efficacy of that new solution, the skill set of the product team to develop it, the success criteria for their experiments. These lists of potential assumptions can get long and overwhelming, but there are techniques that can help product teams break these assumptions into manageable chunks. During the conception of a new feature or changing of a user flow, you may try a risky assumption test, which is a faster, less costly way to learn instead of using an MVP. And if you use a design sprint method, you may capture your assumptions in an assumption board. If you use user story maps to diagram your potential solutions, you may capture assumptions right there on your story map. Now, during a pilot or early access program, you may try using either the assumption board or an experiment design worksheet that I will include a link to capture the assumptions that must come true during the pilot or early access program to know for certain that it was successful. For example, they used it, they preferred it to their alternative, they would be disappointed if they could no longer use it. Your teams will decide the criteria, but capturing these assumptions is a critical part of their experiment design. Now, another quick plug. I partner with Teresa Torres to coach product teams adopting continuous discovery habits, and surfacing and testing assumptions is woven through every step of the curriculum and practice. Coaching your teams on how to adopt these practices and up-level their discovery habits is of interest to you. Please contact me for more info. I'm going to include links to some of Teresa's greatest hits on surfacing assumptions from her Product Talk blog, and you can refer to these resources in the show notes. That was a lot of how-to advice packed into this little episode. I've included links and examples in my show notes, and you can find those on my website, fearless-product.com. Just go to the podcast and look for the How Do You Surface Assumptions Product Discovery, and you'll see the transcript and all of these resources. I hope that the stories in the previous episode, How Have You Been Burned by Risky Assumptions, and the advice and practices from this episode will help you and your product teams surface your riskiest assumptions and interrogate them fearlessly for effective product discovery. If you're a product leader feeling like your product teams and stakeholders are in danger of being burned by risky assumptions, I'd love to be of help. Contact me on LinkedIn or Twitter, or schedule an initial consultation with me using the Contact Me page at fearless-product.com. Thanks for listening to this episode of Fearless Product Leadership. If you know a new product leader who would find this podcast helpful, please share it. You can follow me, Hope Gurion, on LinkedIn and Twitter, or subscribe to the Fearless Product Leadership podcast on your favorite podcast platform to be notified of new episodes. You will find transcripts, video versions of each episode, as well as more information on my Fearless Product coaching and consulting services by visiting my website, fearless-product.com.
Fearless Product. Confidence through evidence.